We will proceed with our next appeal, Emmanuel Priva versus the Attorney General. H. Glenn Fogle Jr. is here for the petitioner Priva. Sarah Pergolese is here for the Attorney General. And Mr. Fogle, you may proceed.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'm Glenn Fogle and I represent the petitioner Emmanuel Priva in this case. This case is fairly basic if you look at it in the big picture. First, there's a statutory right to counsel in reasonable fear proceedings. And second, that the denial of that right to counsel in and of itself is substantial prejudice to the petitioner.
Only if you count privilege as synonymous with right, correct?
Yes, Your Honor, but I'll get into that. But the right to counsel here is so fundamental.
Why would the word privilege be used if what was intended was right, and right is used throughout other immigration statutes?
Well, I mean, a privilege is a right, and all the courts that have looked at
So there's no difference between privilege and right.
I would. That's our position, Your Honor. I mean, if it's a privilege.
But every dictionary you look at, Black's and lay dictionaries, let's call them, recognizes a distinction. The definition isn't the same.
Well, in the dictionary, it isn't the same, but in the immigration context, as in the criminal context, the fact that you have a privilege. If you have a privilege, you don't have to assert it, but it's still a right. If you have a privilege.
That just sounds like double talk.
But let me ask you a question. Like, for example, your driver's license is just a privilege, isn't it? Your right to drive. It's not a guaranteed right, is it?
No, it's not a guaranteed right. No. It's a privilege if you ask for it, but in the immigration context, and the Supreme Court has said that aliens and non-immigrants that are in the United States have a procedural, you know, have the right to due process, and the fact that you have the constitutional right to due process, then there's a statutory right, and that the Immigration and Nationality Act. At 238b4b states that the alien shall have the privilege of being represented at no expense to the government by such counsel authorized to practice in such proceedings as the alien shall choose. Therefore, if an alien invokes that privilege, that means that he has a right to counsel. And the fact that all the warnings, even in the notices and everything, said that you have a right to be represented by counsel of your own choosing.
Let's assume, counsel, that he does have that right and that he would have to show prejudice as a result of a denial of that right. What can you tell us to convince us that your client has sustained substantial prejudice?
Well, so our argument, Your Honor, I believe it's an argument that five other circuits have agreed with, that the right to counsel is so fundamental that you do not need to show prejudice when that right is denied.
Why don't we answer Judge Wilson's question, which is, let's assume that there is a right to counsel, okay? I think under our circuit case law, you still have to make a showing of substantial prejudice. So why don't you tell us how your client has shown substantial prejudice, not related to counsel?
Well, not related to counsel. The fact is that the immigration judge, because he didn't have that counsel, he couldn't properly argue his case. He doesn't understand. He didn't understand anything about anything. If there was counsel there, he would have been able to bring the counsel would have been able to.
Is it your position then that there isn't anything to show substantial prejudice about what would happen to him if he was returned to Haiti? Do you have nothing? I mean,
of course, there's substantial prejudice because he wasn't able to present. He wasn't able to present his case.
But that's just a conclusory statement, counsel. Your counsel made the argument. He didn't have any colorable argument as to a protected ground, correct? Your counsel, time machine, you're back in the hearing with him.
The point is
there or is there not a colorable argument of a protected ground?
Not of a protected ground, but
okay, then he has to show under CAT that the local officials would have condoned or participated in the torture. Now, there's no evidence of that. And in fact, he admitted that they just wanted their money back.
Yes, but the fact that these people were in fact public officials. So
if there's a public official who has a private motive, that is a ground that you would say is sufficient to establish a reason for him to have withholding, right? That's your argument?
Well, with the torture, because
I understand that, but if the motivation, and that's what we're focusing on, and that's what the immigration officials focused on, if the motivation is not to participate as a member of the government, to bring the government's force down, but the motivation is I want my money back that I gave you so that I personally could get a visa and overstay it. That doesn't state a valid ground for withholding, does it?
Well, under CAT, I think that in this case you can show it because when the public officials can use their power as a public official to do something private, but that doesn't. I don't think any government's going to say, "Oh, we're officially torturing people." I mean, nobody's going to admit that, but. But when they do it and they use and corrupt governments, and that's the whole point. Most of these governments are corrupt, and people are and the.
Your argument is that argument could have been made. You don't have any evidence of that, do you?
Well, evidence wasn't presented. He didn't have a chance to do that. But I mean, the evidence of the country conditions, and that's a whole other thing.
But an element of your case. Your case is substantial prejudice. And you can't point to any evidence that these officials, I can't imagine where you could get the evidence, these officials would use their official position to carry out torture for private motivations. Can you?
We've referenced a number of background conditions in our in our brief that I believe supports that. But that's the whole point. He wasn't even able to present this in court because he was denied counsel. And again, I'm going to still point out to the court that it's our position that just the mere denial of counsel in this particular situation is in fact substantial prejudice. And I don't think that this court has specifically held in this context the denial of right in an immigration hearing, the denial of counsel is in immigration proceedings is not substantial prejudice. I think where this court has looked at and where it's been substantial prejudice, where you've had to show substantial prejudice is in an ineffective assistance of counsel situation, but not in a complete denial of
your position is that your substantial prejudice is the denial of counsel, period, end stop.
That's yes, and I think five other circuits have agreed on this, and there's one case that I wanted to point out to the court that I did not we did not put in the brief from the Second Circuit, and that case is Raja versus Mukasey, and it's 544 F3rd 427. It's a Second Circuit 2008 case. And it, that explained that the petitioner is eligible for relief as a result of regulatory violations occurring during a deportation proceeding that affect the fundamental rights derived from the Constitution or federal statutes, even without a showing of prejudice. And there's the Third Circuit, the Seventh Circuit, the Ninth Circuit, and the D.C. Circuit that we've also mentioned in our brief. And I'll respond to the government's arguments in my time for rebuttal.
All right, thank you, Mr. Fogel. Ms. Pergolesi, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I'd like to start to by discussing the CAT claim. The petitioner, Judge Karn, you asked about motivation of the police officers. And you're correct that motivation in the context of CAT matters. And where it matters is where it can be used to ascertain the extent to which a public official will use their official authority to inflict torture. And as you pointed out, that motivation is certainly relevant, but it also shows that the petitioner here has failed to present any claim that the public officials he fears would use or misuse their authority to harm him. And critically, he has failed both to satisfy the merits.
Mr. Pergolesi, didn't he indicate at the hearing that he received threats from several people, including people who work for the government and police officers?
That's correct, Your Honor, but that in and of itself is not sufficient. And he also said that those officers contacted him through private means and not their through their public channels or through their authority. He also provided evidence that one of the men he feared, who is a former police officer, was fired for misuse of his authority in a murder.
Well, he said the police can't even protect themselves, and how are they going to protect him, given the instability in Haiti right now, which is, it's obvious. He's received threats from members of the government. That's in the record.
That's right? True, but not under color of law, which is required. And general evidence of corruption or general violence in a country is insufficient to meet an applicant's burden for CAT ultimately, and to even meet this screening process, because it's not a particularized risk of torture, which is what is required.
What you're telling us is the police, if they act to harm him as private citizens, that's different than the police acting to harm him as members of the government.
That's exactly right. And that's this court's case law for government participation in torture. It has to be under the color of law, which means a use or misuse of official authority. And Priva here has not provided any claim that the government, that these public officials will so act.
Well, maybe he would have been able to do that if he had counsel.
I think critically, Your Honor, he had counsel during his asylum interview, multiple asylum interviews with the asylum officer and his reasonable fear interviews, excuse me. And he did not provide that information even with counsel. And his counsel, when given an opportunity to ask him further questions, did not elicit that further information that would have helped him meet this threshold screening procedure. And therefore, that's the critical reason why the petitioner has failed to provide any evidence that he was prejudiced in these proceedings, because even with counsel, he failed to meet the requirements of this screening procedure.
What about his argument that it's unnecessary for him to demonstrate substantial prejudice because the denial of counsel is a fundamental right, which is consistent with what five other circuits have held?
I'd like to point this court to a decision that it recently made in June of this year in an unpublished decision. And I apologize for not alerting the court earlier. I can file a 28J if you'd prefer, but the citation, the case is Carrick versus Attorney General. That's K-A-H-R-I-C. And it is 861 Federal Appendix 784. In that case, it's an immigration case, and the court required prejudice in a case where the applicant did not have counsel during one of his hearings when he gave pleadings to his notice to appear. Again, the court required prejudice, and I'm not sure if the court addressed this exact argument, but the court has consistently required prejudice in the immigration context, and that panel cited LePay, the one of the decisions that one of the published decisions requiring prejudice that we cited in our response brief. Now, the court recently has held, also, I can file a 28J about this if the court requires, the court recently held in the criminal context in U.S. versus Leonard in July of this year, that's 4F 4th, 1134, that if the defendant, and I quote, is completely deprived of counsel, then the entire process is infected and a court cannot measure actual prejudice. But we would argue that that case is distinguishable from this case, one, because the immigration context has consistently been treated differently by this court, and two, because Priva here was not completely deprived of counsel. He had counsel during his credible fear interviews, four of them, and that counsel did not help him meet this threshold screening process. And so again, it's not a complete deprivation. It's in immigration proceedings where prejudice is required. And for those reasons, the court should deny this petition for review.
What would be the remedy if we accepted Mr. Priva's argument? Would the case go back to the IJ for a new hearing with an opportunity for him to retain counsel?
Yeah, yes, if the court agrees. Again, it's tricky because in these expedited proceedings and in this review process, the immigration court is also mandated to do these reviews quickly. And so a Ninth Circuit case recently has held that an applicant actually wasn't deprived of counsel when he wasn't able to acquire counsel within the 10 days required. So Priva may still not be able to bring counsel to his hearing if he can't get that counsel there quickly enough. But yes, presumably if he does that, he would have another hearing. But that hearing, again, would only be a review. It's not required to be de novo under the regulations.
Right. And as I wanted to ask you about that. So my understanding is in these, since it's expedited, he has these interviews first where he can have counsel, which he did in this case. It was four, I guess, interviews. And then once the AO determines whether or not the alien has a reasonable fear of persecution or torture, I guess then you can request, if you disagree with the determination, then you can request an appeal in front of an IJ.
That's right, yes. Okay. And the regulations just call it a review.
Right.
And that's
where we would be at this point, which is, would he be entitled to a review with the IJ with counsel present?
If the court disagrees about the right to counsel and finds that it substantially prejudiced him, yes. But again, the path is fairly discernibly clear here, even if there were counsel, because the immigration judge agreed in its entirety with the asylum officer's assessment of this case.
Well, I was going to say, and then it appears to me that the IJ then is given the record, right, of
yes.
determination and the AO's notes and the summary of the material facts.
That's so exactly right.
Is it a de novo review, or is it, what kind of review is it?
It's not required to be de novo. It's technically, again, the regulations only say review. Some immigration judge do, as a matter of discretion, some immigration judges do fuller inquiries. And I will again note that the petitioner was represented during these multiple asylum interviews. And while he now says that there's information about country conditions that he could have submitted, he did not submit them to the asylum officer, who has the discretion to review any materials that he submits. So while he could submit those documents before the immigration judge, it's not guaranteed that the immigration judge would receive them.
Really, the main person that's making the determination is the asylum officer.
Yeah, in this context, the asylum officer is essentially the fact finder. Yes. Again, I think Mr. Fogel is correct that this is a simple case in the context that these findings that the applicant failed to meet the threshold screening for proving that he could make a colorable claim to cat protection is supported by substantial evidence, and the court can deny the petition on that ground alone, especially because it also informs his burden to show that he was prejudiced, and he was not. And if the court has no further questions, I'll go ahead and rest on the brief.
All right, thank you, Ms. Pergolesi. And Mr. Fogle, you reserve some time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. A couple of points I do want to make. In terms of the merits of the case, the fact that individuals, or that these government individuals use private means to contact him does not mean that they would not use their public power to torture him. In fact, that's the whole point here. If a government official, a minister, a police officer, they're going to use their power, and it's an abuse, of course, but they're going to abuse their power to arrest somebody, put them in jail, make them disappear. There's a lot of different things that can be done. Again, that's not really, we didn't have to go through all of that, but that wasn't even considered by the immigration judge. This was a five-page transcript of every hearing.
Was it considered by the AO?
No, I don't think it was.
Your client had counsel there, did he not?
The asylum officer said that he did have a credible fear of being tortured.
Right, but he didn't say that it was. He didn't enter a finding in your client's favor regarding the only issue that we're talking about, which is whether any torture or harm would be inflicted or condoned by the government.
And that was where he was wrong, and that was where it could have been argued by counsel in front of the immigration judge. So what the government's argument is saying here, well, he had counsel at the interview, but because of that, he doesn't need counsel in the review. That's like saying you have a right to counsel in district court, but you don't have a right to counsel in the Court of Appeals. I mean, it logically does not make sense. And the fact is, I point out that the government actually admits when they're talking about the jurisdiction, this court has jurisdiction over in order to review this, because the final order of the administrative removal proceedings is not final until the immigration judge actually reviews it. So that actually means that these reasonable fear proceedings are actually part of the expedited removal proceedings, which are immigration proceedings, which means that he has a right to, you know, which mandates that he has a right to counsel under INA 13.
Mr. Fogle, I have a question, and I'm not sure what the answer is, but when in a typical situation, after the AO, the asylum officer, has the hearing and makes a determination, if the individual then chooses to appeal to the immigration judge, are you allowed at that moment to present additional information to the immigration judge, or the immigration judge is just reviewing the materials that were brought to the asylum officer?
Well, the regulation says the judge may receive new evidence.
Okay.
There's no exact, you know, there's, it's not, you know, the people that wrote these regulations didn't put a lot of detail in them, but it's up to the immigration judge. He can do a full de novo hearing, but the alien has a right to actually present evidence, to present new evidence in front of the judge, and the right to counsel, who could argue his case and actually properly articulate it to a judge, so the judge can actually review it.
There isn't any particular, every IJ can do something different. There's no particular set.
I mean, there's no particular rule, but you do have the right. Again, I think if there's a right to counsel, you would have a right to present evidence. And I would also point out the asylum officers have access to vast materials on country conditions. These are matters that, of record that people can look at. It's not, and this guy was, Mr. Priva was in jail at the time, and he just didn't have access. We didn't have access to be able to provide all of this information in an interview. And then again, he was denied the right to counsel at the court hearing, which was 4 days later.
Let me ask you something, Mr. Fogel. Your law firm, or attorney from your law firm, represented the petitioner before the asylum officer, did he not? Did she not actually?
Yes.
All right. And you're representing him now, obviously. Why didn't y'all make an appearance and represent him during the review proceeding?
We weren't notified, Your Honor. We weren't notified of the hearing.
When did
the
you?
The hearing had already happened, and we didn't even know it. We found out about it later.
Did you move to reopen?
You can't do that. I mean, there's not a mechanism to do that. The only mechanism we have for review is an appeal to the circuit court, which is, I don't know if that's the best thing to do.
I understand. You've answered my question.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Fogel and Mr.
Thank you.
Thank you both.